This is the Back Doctors Podcast, enlightening conversations with doctors from around the world, sharing patient stories and treatment strategies to reduce pain and increase quality of life for those suffering with spine-related conditions. You'll hear their struggles and successes as they inform, educate, and offer hope for the millions of people who have back pain. And now, here's your host, Dr. Michael Johnson.
Welcome to this episode of the Back Doctors Podcast. Our spine specialist today is Dr. Joseph Cabaret. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Cabaret.
Hey, thanks for having me. Good morning.
As you know, the podcast is to help people in spine pain. And I know you've had a lot of experience treating people with spine pain. So let's jump right in. And what can you offer our listeners?
Well, you know, it's amazing. There's a lot to offer. What's happening in interventional pain management, and interventional pain management simply means, you know, pain management where the doctor uses injections, certain minimally invasive surgeries to help people living with chronic pain to, you know, have less pain, have better function, have a better quality of life. And we, you know, while we do manage medications and offer physical therapy and, you know, it's comprehensive pain care, but interventional pain specialists do have this ability to intervene in a more invasive way to target certain pain generators in the spine. You know, I can explain any of these terms that are too, if you're not understanding, I can help you understand easily. But this is what interventional pain doctors do. So it is a time in life where interventional pain management is kind of exploding. There are so many new things coming down the pike as we speak. I spent this past weekend training on two new procedures. You know, I flew to Dallas and sat there and learned how to, you know, spent a couple of days learning how to do two new procedures that we didn't have before, that, you know, we couldn't offer patients before. And this has been happening over the last, I don't know, I'd say 5 to 10 years, especially in the last 7 years. There's been like this unbelievable pipeline of new procedures. And so we can help people more than we could ever help people before in the past. We have therapies targeting certain pain generators. And Michael, what I mean by a pain generator is, you know, let's say you drop a bowling ball on your toe now and you crush the bone. So that crushed bone is going to hurt. That's what we call a pain generator. And when you look at something as complex as the spinal cord or the spine, then you see that there are a lot of pain generators there. The spine has a number of anatomical features, you know, the disc, the joints, we call them the facet joints. There's a fancier way to say that, but the easy way is just facet joints. And there are nerves, you know, the spinal cord is running down and there are nerves coming out at each level. And there are muscles surrounding all this, tendons, ligaments, and all of these things can hurt. They all have a nerve supply that can tell the brain, hey, something's wrong here. And as we age, just like our faces age and our bodies age, and you can look at a person and say that person's 20 or 30 or 40 or 50, you can kind of guess most people's age, you know, give or take. It's the same thing with a spine. When we look at an MRI scan of the spine, it ages. And so I can say, oh, that's a 20-year-old spine, that's a 40-year-old spine, that's a 60-year-old spine. And once again, give or take, you know, 10 years, you can kind of zero in. And so when you see those degenerative changes, that aging process in the spine, it, you know, there is degeneration of the discs, degeneration of the joints, just like we can get arthritis in our hands and, you know, your knuckles can get swollen and painful and, you know, red and hot. It's the same thing in your spine. So, you know, there's a lot of things that can cause low back pain. And we have more ways to target those various things than we ever did before. I'll give you one example, if you'd like. There has been, for the past 100 years, we've been trying to solve this problem of disc pain, right? We call it, you know, about 100 years ago, a couple of surgeons started saying, hey, you know, the problem is people, what's hurting is the disc. And it's been the holy grail of pain management. We've invented so many procedures over the years that were supposed to solve this problem of disc pain, right? And we just couldn't make it work. Everything that came out looked good for a while and then kind of ended up not panning out. And what complicates everything in medicine, Michael, especially in interventional pain management, is this placebo effect, right? Because placebo is so powerful. 30 to 40% of people will respond to a sham procedure or a fake drug, right? So when you do a study, what we call a randomized controlled trial, you have, you know, you take 1,000 patients and you give them a placebo, you give them a fake pill, and you take 1,000 people and you give them the real pill, or you do a, you take 1,000 people, do a sham procedure, and you take 1,000 people, do a real procedure. Now, because pain is not measurable, we don't have a blood pressure cuff for pain or, you know, a lab test for pain. It's a very subjective thing. People say my pain is 10 or my pain is zero. And you have to take that at face value. We've developed some ways to try to quantify that better, such as, you know, how well is a person functioning? But at the end of the day, if you tell me you have pain, you have pain. You know, that's, who am I to, you know, contradict that? So when you're doing a study, a randomized controlled trial about pain, it's difficult to beat that placebo effect, right? If 40% of people are getting better, it really confounds all your results. And so it makes it difficult to prove that anything works. Now, you know, this disc pain is a place where a lot of therapies have gone to die. You know, they looked good for a while, probably in part due to placebo effect. And then at the end of the day, they didn't pan out. We couldn't prove in a real randomized controlled trial that these therapies worked. Just recently, in the last year, in the United States, the FDA has approved a new procedure called, you know, the Intracept procedure. And this procedure is a procedure with a whole new concept. I mean, this is 20 years in the making, right? It just came out now. We think these things appear out of nowhere, but this company has been trying to prove its point about what discogenic pain is and develop a procedure for it for the past 20 years. And now we see the results. And what this is it's a whole new concept about disc pain. And the scientists and the makers of this, the owners of this company, the developers, believe that it's not really the disc that's hurting. It's the end plates where the disc meets the vertebra. And so these end plates are bony, you know, articulations, almost like a joint, but instead of having, you know, cartilage on cartilage, it has this disc in between. And I think everybody's familiar with the spinal discs. It's that shock absorber in the spine between the bones. And the disc does have some innervation, but these end plates where the disc meets the bone are highly innervated. And we've proven that, you know, they've done the science. And they've also proven that this highly innervated end plate can hurt. It has plenty of pain fibers there. And in the center of the vertebral body, there's something called the vertebrobasilar nerve. And that nerve supplies the disc above and the disc below. And so what we've learned is if somebody has evidence on their MRI scan of end plate changes, end plate irregularities, and, you know, it's very technical, but let's just keep it simple. Then we can request authorization for this procedure. We can, through Medicare, do this procedure. And what we do is we go in through, I don't want to get too technical, we go in through the pedicle and we put a radio frequency probe in the center of that vertebral body and we burn out that vertebrobasilar nerve. And this procedure has a very high success rate, well above placebo. It's now, you know, approved by the FDA because they do believe that this is a statistically significant and clinically significant procedure in terms of improving pain. And so now we can burn out that vertebrobasilar nerve above and below that disc level and, you know, 70% chance and, you know, give or take, don't quote me exactly. You can go look at the study yourself, but about a 70% success rate in treating that discogenic pain. And so, you know, we've been doing fusion surgeries for years and years in America with very little success. I'm talking about for axial back pain, right? For people who don't have any instability in their back and just have back pain. Surgeries do work for certain types of pain generators, right? That's where we started out. But we've been using them for other things where it really doesn't work that well and probably is causing more problems than it's solving. In other words, you have to select the right procedure, the right treatment for the right patient. And that what that really involves, Michael, is, you know, the right diagnosis. And so first and foremost, an interventional pain doctor, I think our primary responsibility is to try to identify the real pain generator. And so you look at a spine and you go, wow, you've got, I look at a 70-year-old person, I say, you have everything wrong. Your joints are arthritic, your discs are degenerated, you've got stenosis or narrowing of the central canal, you've got narrowing of the canals where the nerves come out. You know, what's the pain generator? And so my job is through in an interview and a physical exam and through reviewing imaging reports and other diagnostic studies, trying to zero in on the pain generator. And it is a little bit like a crime scene investigation. And I'm a little bit like a detective. And what I do is I show up and I look at the scene and I try to develop some suspects. And then you start to go after those suspects. And it may be with a test that you do in the office, you know, a physical exam. It might be a new diagnostic study that you order. And usually what it comes down to is some type of spinal injection, diagnostic injection. And so you can eliminate suspects that are not actually causing the pain, that are not the pain generator, and try to zero in on what the pain generator is, and then design, you know, the best treatment plan for that patient's pain. And that's really pain, interventional pain management in a nutshell.
What do you find to be the most common pain generator?
Oh my gosh. It's kind of like the usual suspects, right? I think there are different studies saying different percentages, and I'm not sure any of them really know. I mean, I know none of us really know the exact amount of what, but it looks like, you know, again, very wild estimate here, a very sort of rough draft is, you know, we used to say about 40% of the time it's the joints in the back, about 40% of the time it's the disc, and about 20% of the time it's the sacroiliac joint. This was, you know, 10 years ago before we had all these new procedures. And so when a new procedure comes out, Michael, it changes the whole landscape. In other words, if I don't have something to treat your discogenic pain, if I don't have a treatment for that, then I'm not really looking for it, right? There's no point in finding out. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess the point would be that we don't do other unnecessary treatments, but you're not as motivated to search for that particular diagnosis if you don't have a treatment for that diagnosis. You're looking for things you can treat. And so as these new developments come along, you change the way you look at a patient, you change the way you look at pain, and you start to say, in this case, could Michael have that problem? Because if he does, I could treat it.
With the Intracept procedure then, are those patients usually discogenic pain patients?
Well, they are what Intracept patients are what we used to call discogenic pain patients. Now we call them vertebrogenic pain patients. Mm-hmm. So this company actually came up with a new diagnosis, and this is not anything insignificant. They were so well organized and well thought out that they were able to get Medicare and, you know, the powers that be to assign a new diagnostic code for vertebrogenic pain. And so now, you know, when you're working with the insurance companies, it's all about numbers. You have to, every diagnosis has a little number next to it. And so now there's a number, you know, 61315, whatever it is, that identifies that vertebrogenic pain to the insurance company. This was developed by this company that invented Intracept. And so it's really the vertebral body that hurts, but it's what we used to call discogenic pain. And these are patients that sort of fell into a category that we didn't know what to do with. So if you have joint pain, I can fix it. If you have pain from the nerves, I can fix it. If you have, you know, narrowing of the canal, I can do things for that. But if you had this quote unquote discogenic pain, which really meant we've eliminated all those other suspects and there's nothing left, it has to be the disc because there's no other really, so, you know, thing that could be causing pain in your back. Well, now we have something for that, right? We can treat that. So we're looking for it.
Are you doing a lot of the Intracept procedure then?
The Intracept is something that's so new that I haven't even done one yet. I'm building a pipeline of patients that I, you know, when you had a new procedure like this, you have to go through your whole practice, right? And look at each patient that you've been treating for maybe 10 years and say, wait a second, maybe Michael's problem is this thing. And so it takes time to identify those patients, go back and look at all their MRI scans again, see if they are candidates for this procedure, and then, you know, start the whole process of getting authorization and, you know, completing all the things that it takes in America to do a procedure. Because we, you know, it's not like the old days where I say, hey, I think Michael needs this and let's do it. Now in our healthcare system, the doctor says, hey, I think Michael needs this treatment. And you start a process with the insurance company that can take weeks and even months sometimes to, you know, get them to authorize the treatment.
Well,
so that's where we're at.
And they certainly know better than you.
Oh, you bet they do. I can't be trusted to make any real important decisions.
Yeah. So let's go into the future a little bit more. So you had mentioned you were just in Texas learning two new procedures. So this has got to be cutting edge. What is the future? What are you seeing from this training that you just went to?
So, you know, can I just sort of do a little preamble?
Sure.
Like I said, in the last 7 years, a lot of new things have been coming down the pike. And it really all started with a new type of spinal cord stimulator. And I'm going to answer your question. And there was a new type of spinal cord stimulator with new technology that really kind of blew the lid off of what we thought we knew about spinal cord stimulation. And we can talk more about spinal cord stimulation if you want. But, you know, they came out, really the thing that this new company came up with was this incredible study, this data. And this data showed that there was an 80% success rate with this procedure. Previously, we used to say 50% of people get 50% better, which, you know, isn't that great, right? If you're the insurance company, you're thinking, I'm going to pay for 100 of these and only 50 of them are going to work okay. And this new company showed that they could get an 80% response rate. And all the other numbers were much higher too. You know, the number of people with a 90% success rate were much higher. The number of people who had no pain were higher. So the data was very amazing. And most of us were a little skeptical. And what happened was all the other insurance companies, all the other device manufacturers who made spinal cord stimulators started following suit. They started creating these studies, these big randomized controlled trials. And they were all able to show that with their new technologies, they could get a similar result, 80% success rate. And so that kind of sparked a whole new wave of pain management therapies in America that, you know, perhaps had existed in other parts of the world for years, but now everybody realized, hey, if I can produce the data, if I can produce a study that shows the kind of numbers that the FDA wants to see, you know, we can make a fortune. We can come up, you know, we just have to come up with something that works. And since then, there's been this explosion that I'm talking about in the field of pain management, not just in spinal cord stimulation, but everything else as well. So this weekend, I was training in a couple of new things that have come along that are equally mind-blowing for someone who does what I do, where there's something called lumbar spinal stenosis. And this is something that happens in the older population, the Medicare age population, usually over 65 is where you start to see this issue. It's narrowing of the spinal canal. So we have this bony canal that runs down our back from our brain down to our tailbone. And it's got, you know, it's a fixed space, it's bone. And the spinal cord runs through it, right? And normally there's a lot of room for that spinal cord to kind of float around in this bag of fluid. And, you know, if there's any problems, there's plenty of room. As we age, because of the degeneration of the discs and the joints, et cetera, that spinal canal can get tight and it can start to squeeze the spinal cord. And especially when we stand up, our backs extend and it kind of squishes down all the structures and they squeeze into the canal. And so this is people with lumbar spinal stenosis get pain when they're standing and walking. So it's elderly patients who have back pain when they're standing and walking. So a person comes into me, 70-year-old guy or gal, and says, oh, I have pain in my back. And so the next question out of my mind is it worse when you're standing and walking? Oh, yes, it is. Does it get better when you sit down? Yep, it does. Does it get better when you lean forward on a shopping cart? Yes, it does. And we say, oh, okay, I know what you have. And I have a procedure that's 70% success rate. It's higher success rate than an open surgery. You know, when you go to the surgeon and say, I've got this problem, do a lumbar decompression. Well, I can get a better success rate without putting you in the hospital without an overnight stay. We can do it at my surgery center without general anesthesia. We do it under IV sedation. It's a 20 or 30 minute procedure with this high success rate, much less bleeding risk, much less everything risk. The cost is 1/10 of an open surgery. I mean, you're getting this? This is really a no-brainer. This is a revolutionary thing for elderly people with low back pain. So this weekend I was training on a new technique for solving this low lumbar spinal stenosis problem. We put a spacer between the spinous processes in the back of the spine, and it opens up, it holds that space open so that when you stand up, instead of it crushing down, it now has this spacer that keeps it open. And so it tricks your body into thinking you're still sitting down, and people stand straighter. They have less pain. They can stand. Some people get 100% resolution of symptoms. Some people get zero, right? It's like everything else in life. It's not 100% success rate, but this is a game changer. And this happened, you know, these types of therapies came out about, again, 6 or 7 years ago. And we've been, we've been developing better therapies ever since. And the one that I trained on this weekend is a new type of device where we actually fuse that level. We put bone matrix in there, you know, biomaterials that create a fusion. And so where the therapies that we've been using for the past 5 years or so really only put a spacer in, and it didn't work for certain types of patients who had some instability or some slippage at that level. Now we can do that for those patients as well with this newer device. So you see, it just keeps getting better and better. Same thing, at the same time, I was training on another procedure called an SI joint fusion. And, you know, I'm not naming the products. I don't think that's the right thing to do, but I just want to, you know, name the procedure. We can now go in and fuse the sacroiliac joint. And that's the joint at the bottom of the spine that joins the spine to the hips, to the pelvic girdle. So the pelvis is like a circle, right? It's a bony circle that holds all our abdominal contents, our pelvic contents. It's the circle that holds the baby when a woman is pregnant, and then the baby exits through the pelvis. And it's a vulnerable structure because it's a circle, and because all the weight of the upper body is on that joint. The entire spine, which is supporting our body, really just lands on those two joints, right and left sacroiliac joint. So there's a lot of stress on that joint. And people get sacroiliac joint injuries. They get sacroiliac joint pain. And it's been another problem that was difficult to treat long-term, right? We can do injections, and some people do very well with the injections, but oftentimes they don't last very long. So if I do a procedure, if you have sacroiliac joint pain, if that's your pain generator, Michael, and I inject it and you get a great result and it lasts for 4 weeks, well, what are we going to do? You know, I can only do about 4 a year because of the steroid medication. So what are we going to do the other 2 months until you can have another one? So now we've got procedures for that. We've got ways to do a minimally invasive, you know, under X-ray. So everything I'm talking about to you, Michael, interventional pain doctors, instead of opening things up like a surgeon and looking directly into the wound, looking directly at the structures, or now we have this arthroscopic surgery, right? All the orthopedic surgeons and even the general surgeons, they go in with these cameras on the end of a long stick, and they make a little tiny incision in your abdomen or in your joint, and they put the camera in, and they're looking at a screen right over there while they're operating here, and they're watching, and it's a skill that you learn. It's like playing a video game, and you do everything under direct visualization. What interventional pain doctors do is we do the same thing, but we use X-rays and ultrasounds. We use imaging techniques to look inside the body without making big incisions. So we can do these minimally invasive procedures with an incision that's an inch or less and put an instrument in. Instead of having a camera at the tip of the instrument where we're looking with direct visualization at the structures, we're looking at an X-ray image. And we have the expertise, you know, and the knowledge and the skill to interpret those X-ray images and see our instruments moving through the anatomical structures. And we can say, oh, I'm where I want to be. I've now got, and you know, these are skills you have to have. That's why it, you know, takes so long to become a master. But, you know, we can under X-ray through a minimally invasive incision, fuse that sacroiliac joint. I mean, this is you know, this used to be something that you have to splay the patient wide open and they'd be in the hospital for days and, you know, long recovery times with physical therapy and opioids to manage the pain. And now you do this in a, you know, 30, 60 minute procedure. You send that patient home an hour after, you know, less than an hour after you're done. Maybe a little bit of opioids if they're really struggling with the pain, but don't need any post-op opioids, no post-op therapy, you know, physical therapy, nothing. They just go back to their life with less pain, greater function, greater quality of life. It's pretty amazing. And I can tell you about other therapy. I mean, this is happening left and right.
Yeah, that's exciting. So we've talked about the past and we just talked about the future. I know you have a busy day ahead of you today.
Yeah.
What kind of things are you doing today, right now?
So today is kind of a fun day for me. I'm going to go to the operating room today. I'm not going to be in the office. So I'm in the office and I have other mid-level providers like nurse practitioners and physician's assistants in the office with me. And we see the patients and we design a treatment plan for them. We tailor a treatment plan that's specifically designed for what we think is the pain generator or generators. And we then, you know, if part of that plan involves doing a minimally invasive surgery or an injection, I take them to the surgery center and I line up, you know, 10, 20, 30 cases, injections or surgeries. And we spend the day doing that. And that's what I'm doing today. So I'm going to go to the surgery center. There's a number of patients, you know, that are going to be lined up waiting for their procedures. And today I'm going to do two spinal cord stimulation procedures. And one is a person who already has a spinal cord stimulator in place, placed probably about 10 years ago, more or less, and now is looking for better equipment, right? We have better technology now. So I can put in, I'm going to switch out her old spinal cord stimulator for a new one. She's had a great result with this. She has a very difficult problem that, you know, 20 years ago, we probably couldn't have helped her with. And now with these new technologies, we can. She's gotten a great result from her spinal cord stimulator, but there's newer technology now. We can put in spinal cord stimulators that are completely MRI compatible. And that's what I'm going to do for her today. She's going to be able to get an MRI anywhere in her body with this device in place. It's remarkable. And it's also got new technology in terms of programming. So we're going to be able to do a lot more sophisticated electronic programming for her so that she can has more choices in terms of how she wants to manage her pain and what types of waveforms she wants to use to better live and manage her pain. The other case is a spinal cord stimulator, and I think I'm going to remove just the battery part. And, you know, these little batteries are implanted. It's kind of like a pacemaker. And so instead of putting the little battery in and the wires going to the heart, we put a little battery in the low back. It's a little flat little device, and we implant it and we tunnel through and we put these electrodes on the spine. So it's like a pacemaker for the spine. But what it's there to do is interrupt these pain signals or modify pain signals coming from your body and making them less unpleasant, less painful. And so I'm going to do two procedures that are related to the spinal cord stimulator today. And then I'm going to do a number of injections and some radio frequency ablations. And, you know, if you want to go into any of this, Michael, we can, but.
Talk to me a little bit more about the spinal cord stimulator. Tell me for our listeners, as if I'm a patient that you've recommended this for, how's this work? Mm-hmm. Can you tell me that? Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when I started out today, I spoke a little bit about spinal cord stimulation. And this is what we call electroceuticals, right? We have pharmaceuticals where you take a pill and it goes into your body and changes things, hopefully for the better. Well, this is what some people call electroceuticals. We're using electricity to help your pain, to make your pain less unpleasant, to make it less strong, right? And we call it modulation. We're modulating the pain. We're changing the way you perceive the pain. And so this is called neuromodulation because we're doing it through the nerves. We're putting electrical stimulation on the dorsal columns of your spinal cord. And, you know, this is getting a little technical, but we put it in the back of the spinal cord where all the sensory signals are moving from the body up to the brain. And they're providing information to the brain. Hey, my foot is over here. I'm holding my hand next to my head. So even with my eyes closed, My brain knows that because there's signals coming from the nerves telling my brain where my hand is in space, right? If someone puts a vibrating object on my hand, I can feel the vibration even with my eyes closed because there's nerves that tell my brain there's a vibration there. And so we can put these little electrodes on the back of the spinal cord where all that information is gathering and traveling to the brain. And we can modulate the way the brain perceives the pain signals. So maybe it feels like vibration. Maybe it feels like something different than pain. That signal that we're sending to the brain overrides the pain signals. They sort of take precedence and drown out the pain signals. And the brain can only focus on that sensation that it's feeling. Well, this was the way we thought that spinal cord stimulation worked. It was called the gate control theory, that the spinal cord can only send so much information to the brain. And if we flood it with non-painful stimulation or sensations, then it'll drown out the pain signal. We now know that that's not necessarily the case because, again, all the new technology that's come out in the last 5 to 10 years has proved that maybe that's not the case. We have new types of stimulators now that provide no paresthesia at all. You don't feel anything. You don't even know it's there, but your pain is less. And so there must be some other mechanism of action that's working. Perhaps maybe part of it is that gate control theory. And we know that some of it is something else. There are theories. And one of the theories is that it's the glial cells, right? And you've probably been hearing, or maybe your audience has been hearing about glial cells now. And there's like 10 to 20 glial cells for every neuron in your brain. And these glial cells are sort of the support structure for the neurons, for the actual neural components that are transmitting information. And these glial cells, we used to think were just sitting there and kind of holding everything together. And now we know that they play a very active role in how the brain functions. They influence the neurons. They crosstalk with the neurons. They change the way the neurons function. They actually have a very important role in our brain function and a very important role in pain management. And so if we think that maybe some of the ways that the spinal cord stimulation is working is actually by changing the glial cells and their relationship with the neurons. And you know, there are other theories too. There are theories that it's actually the spinal cord stimulation is working at a higher level. It's doing something in the brain and it's changing even our mood, right? Like pain usually causes depression, anxiety. And we think that the spinal cord stimulator is actually, perhaps certain types of stimulation are actually changing higher levels of, you know, of this system up in the brain and making the pain less unpleasant at a brain level. And so we're still trying to figure all this out. And there's a pipeline, Michael. Now there's this new type of stimulation that I think 5-10 years from now, maybe I'm being too ambitious, I'm not sure, but is going to supplant everything we have that we're using right now. And this is a type of feedback loop, evoked potentials, where you measure on a millisecond level. I mean, every millisecond, you're measuring the response of the neurons to the spinal cord stimulation, and you're adjusting. This machine, this box, this technology is constantly micro-adjusting the voltage level of the stimulator to match what it's producing in the spinal cord. This is a little bit complicated. This is pretty high level stuff, but it's, you know, it creates an even more smooth and a more effective response to the spinal cord stimulation. And so all of these technologies are brewing right now. They're coming out. They're already informing our decisions about how to help people manage pain. It used to be there was just spinal cord stimulation. It was like, hey, here it is. This is all it is. And there were different companies and they would talk about our remote is a prettier color and that remote has more bells and whistles. And it really didn't, there really wasn't any major technological differences. And now that's all changed. We have high frequency stimulation. We have something called burst stimulation. We have, you know, multiplex differential targeted therapies. You know, there's all new stuff. And now there's these evoked potentials coming out that are probably going to be in every device 10 years from now, no matter who makes it, no matter what platform they're using, they're going to be, it's called a little bit like Intel Inside. They're going to have this way to measure what they're doing and instantly adjust the stimulation level and the parameters to best match you know, what's going to be most effective in managing your pain. Pretty remarkable stuff.
Yeah, a lot of exciting stuff.
Yes.
You've talked about a lot of new exciting things, but I know you're involved with WellBrain. Can you tell me about that and how that can help our listeners?
Oh man, WellBrain, you know, now you're going to fire me up again. I could go on forever about all this stuff. WellBrain is something that, you know, again, is kind of new in the American landscape for pain management. I've been talking about the fact that pain is an emotional experience. It's not just a physical experience. I don't care who you are. There's an emotional component, or you wouldn't be coming to see me. You're not happy about your pain. And so WellBrain is a company that has figured out a way to create a reimbursable event in my office where I can address the patient's central component, right? Their psychological component, if you will, the emotional component of their pain, and actually get reimbursed for that. And so this is a way to incentivize doctors to do the right thing, right? In other words, let's not just focus on all these wonderful therapies. I mean, don't get me wrong. These are life-changing therapies, spinal cord stimulation, sacroiliac joint fusion, you know, interspinous spacers, great, great therapies. But some people need more than that. And some people need something other than that. And WellBrain has now come along and provided this new platform, this new technology, if you will, that allows doctors to assess patients' psychosocial needs and then prescribe treatments through the website for those needs. Things like mindfulness meditation pathways or physical therapy pathways that we can direct patients to. And they can do all this on their own at home. It's like homework. And so we can now enhance their treatment outcome through this more holistic approach, right? So if I see someone and I say, hey, I want to do a spinal cord stimulator, but you also have this psychological component, you know, you've had pain for a while, you're bummed out, you're anxious. There's a lot of things that this pain has produced in you that need treatment as well. And I can sort of provide you with resources for that and get reimbursed for it. And so it's not just me for all these years, I've been doing this out of the goodness of my heart and spending a lot of time with patients and really, you know, being punished for it financially. And now there's a way to actually, you know, at least recoup some of that cost through this WellBrain company. So WellBrain is another, I'm just as excited about WellBrain as I am about all these new technologies that we've been talking about. And I'm looking forward to where this is going. I think in the future, we're going to see more and more of this, not just in pain management, but across the board in all specialties, where we start to address patients in a more holistic way, in a more whole person way, right? Michael, you're not just a toe or an elbow or a shoulder. That all that stuff is attached to a brain and a soul, and all of those things get affected when you live with chronic pain.
Well, we've covered a lot of material and we kind of jumped right into our subject matter. But let's talk a little bit about you and about your practice.
Well, you know, I'm an interventional pain specialist. That's my primary role. I was an anesthesiologist in my past life. And when I say past life, you know, for half of my career, I was working in the operating room, you know, making people insensate or comfortable for their surgical procedures. I was the one putting you to sleep or doing, you know, different types of nerve blocks to make the surgery tolerable. At midway through my career, I switched into full-time pain management. So now I am more like the surgeon. I'm in the office seeing patients. I'm no longer in the operating room as an anesthesiologist. I'm there as the operator. And so I see patients in the office and I devise these plans, you know, try to come up with the most accurate diagnosis so that I can come up with the most accurate treatment plan. And this is called what I call precision pain medicine. And, you know, I think what's unique about me, Michael, is while I have this interventional background and I'm very skilled with my hands and I've always been someone who has that gift, I'm also an addiction specialist. I have board certification in addiction medicine. And I think that kind of informs my whole approach to pain management, where when I meet a patient, I'm not just looking for a peripheral pain generator, you know, that crushed toe because you dropped the bowling ball. Pain is so complex, Michael. It's not a simple thing. It involves physical sensations and it involves emotions. Pain is a very emotional experience. You know, if you can take the emotions out of pain, you know, there are people who are born with, or, you know, there are certain drugs that can make you not really care. And you say, yeah, my pain is 10 out of 10, but you're not upset about it. It's not distressing. And if we could all do that, we wouldn't need a doctor like me. Just say, oh yeah, I just got my leg chopped off and it hurts, but I don't care, right? The problem with pain is it's emotional. We care. We say my knee hurts and it's depressing me. It's making me anxious. I can't exercise. I'm gaining weight. I can't sleep at night. I'm, you know, it's affecting everything, all my relationships. This pain is, it has an emotional component. And I think we tend to miss that in medicine a lot. And so I really have made it my mission to not miss it. And so when I meet a patient, the first thing I try to do is discern, you know, how much of this is what I call central pain versus peripheral pain. And so if we're looking at this as, you know, the two ends of the spectrum, right? Someone who perhaps is purely feeling physical pain due to an emotional problem. And there are people who have something called conversion disorder, for example. And with conversion disorder, you can become completely paralyzed, but it's all mental. It's all in your head. There's no real reason why, right? People become deaf or mute and they can't speak anymore after a traumatic event. And there's nothing wrong with their voice box. There's nothing wrong with their ability to talk. They just can no longer speak. Pain can be like that. You know, people with a history of trauma, especially, can show up in a pain doctor's office and say, oh, you know, I've got this horrible pain, and you really can't find anything wrong with them. That's an extreme, right? There are very few people like that in the world. There are other people who come and they've dropped a bowling ball on their toe and it's just purely pain. They don't have any depression or anxiety or any psychosocial overlay. It's really just a physical problem. And they need a doctor like me to come in and do it, somehow intervene and change their body, right? That problem that's in their body. Then there's everything in between. That's most of us, Michael. Most of us fall somewhere between those two extremes. There's a central component to our pain. There's a way that we relate to the world and to that produces distress. And so a lot of patients who come to me, it's just as important that we sort of help them manage their distress as it is to try and take their pain away, especially if they have a type of pain that isn't going to go away completely with medical care. And there's a lot of things like that. There's a lot of people in the world, most people I'd say, who have pain that, you know, you're not going to take it all away. And so it becomes just as important to learn how to make peace with that pain, whatever's left, to accept what's happened to you, this tragic thing that's happened in your life, this loss that you've experienced. And it's just as important to help people process all that as it is to do these injections, these surgeries, et cetera. In fact, in many cases, it's more important, Michael. Mm-hmm. And so I would be doing you a disservice if I just, and that's what unfortunately happens to a lot of people. When we miss this central component, I don't really want to call it a psychological component because I think it's more complex than that. It's a spiritual issue. It's a psychological issue. And I do want to say that, you know, trauma has a lot to do with this, but people with PTSD, especially people who've had adverse childhood events, they tend to experience, you know, other losses in their life as more distressing than the average person who doesn't have PTSD. And so the life becomes more, everything becomes more, right? You missed the bus. It's the end of the world. As opposed to just, okay, I'll catch another bus. You know, oh, I have knee pain. A person without PTSD or without, you know, these issues might say, oh, my knee hurts and it's bumming me out, versus my knee hurts and I can't take it and it's going to kill me. And, you know, just sort of catastrophizing your symptoms. So catastrophizing is a big word in pain management. And that's kind of what I'm talking about. So, Michael, I think I bring a unique perspective in the sense that I have all these skills and I have all this knowledge and I can do every type of pain procedure under the sun. And I'm good at it, but I also tend to be very selective about who I do these things with. And if you come to me and I detect through my interview process and my physical exam and everything else that every other tool I use to try and find the pain generator, if I detect that your pain generator has a central component, right, in your spinal cord, in your brain, then I'm going to change the treatment plan. I'm going to start to make that one of my targets. And, you know, you don't fix that with pills, shots, and surgeries. You fix that with education, meditation, mindfulness, books, giving people resources where they can learn more about pain, if it's appropriate, where they can learn more about PTSD, you know, whatever it is that they need to do. Sometimes you need to send them to a psychologist or a support group. And then when the opioids come into play, when people start taking addictive substances to manage their symptoms, oh, it just, it's like pouring gasoline on the fire. Everything just spins out of control. And as an addiction specialist and a pain specialist, that's sort of another sweet spot that I like to find and say, okay, look, Michael, you've been taking these drugs that, you know, supposedly are helping your pain. And I think they're actually making your pain worse. They probably helped initially, but when you take an addictive substance chronically, day in and day out for more than 3 to 6 months, usually I'm 90, I don't know, I don't have a number, but most of the time they become counterproductive. Your pain is actually worse than it would be if you weren't taking the medications. This is very difficult for pain patients to understand. You know, to them, they say, this is the only thing that helps me. This pill I'm taking is the only thing I have. What they don't realize is the pill is taking away the pain that's being caused by withdrawal from the pill. And so they're really in this endless cycle of constant subacute withdrawal, and their pain is constantly spinning out of control because they need more and more of this medication that they can't get enough of. So that's what happens to a lot of patients, unfortunately, living with chronic pain. I'm not talking about addiction. This isn't a case where someone is spinning out of control with addiction. This is someone who's developed tolerance to the effects of the medication, but at the same time has developed dependence on the medication and can't stop taking it. And so it's a very horrible place to be and a scary place to be. And I think it takes just as much skill and knowledge and precision to treat that as it does to go in and do a surgical procedure on the spinal cord. You know, these are complex issues that require a complex thought process, right? And I think a lot of us are missing it. And part of the reason, Michael, is the way, you know, things are reimbursed in America. And I don't know about other countries, but, you know, we're rewarded to do a lot of medical procedures. That's really where the incentives are. And, you know, I think that's changing. I think in the last year, again, Michael, we've seen some pretty big changes in the way we can get reimbursed for addressing patients' emotional needs, right? Psychological, spiritual needs. And so it's becoming now a viable thing. You can actually get paid to help people with that side of their pain care. And another positive development. I mean, there's never been a better time. Everybody laughs when I say this, but there's never been a better time to be a pain sufferer because we've got so many great new therapies to help these people out. You know, I'm a chronic pain sufferer, so, you know, including myself.
Well, a lot of great information. I know we're going to have some listeners who want to reach out to you. So mm-hmm. Can you tell us where you're located and give us some contact information for our listeners?
So I'm located in Camarillo, California. It's a little north of Los Angeles between Santa Barbara and Malibu. I have a small practice. It's called Genesis Pain Specialists, GPS. The phone number is 805-914-0637. And, you know, usually, especially right now with all this COVID, you'll leave a message and we will get back to you. So you might not get a person on that line. If you want to email us, it's info@genesispainspecialists.com. And you can go to my website, genesispainspecialist.com, or even drcabaret.com. They both lead to the same website. And you can text us from there. You can, you know, contact us through the website. And I love helping people out with, you know, I just love helping people lead more full and rewarding lives in spite of their pain. And sometimes I can take their pain away and sometimes I can't, but I do love to lead them toward healthier pain management decisions and a more full and rewarding life, no matter what.
Well, I certainly appreciate you being on the podcast, and obviously our listeners just can hear in your voice your passion for helping people. And that's what the podcast is all about. So Dr. Cabaret, thank you for being with us today on the Back Doctors Podcast.
My pleasure, Michael. Thank you for having me.
This episode of the Back Doctors Podcast has been sponsored by Haven Medical, the team of highly skilled engineers who handcraft every Cox 8 instrument.
The Cox 8 is the only table that is certified by Dr. James Cox to perform all Cox technique protocols because it's been designed and built and based on over 50 years of his pioneering research. No other table performs like a Cox 8 or allows doctors to treat such a diverse range of conditions, including cases other doctors have given up on. And right now, Haven Medical has a special offer for doctors. If you'd like to get more involved with Cox Technique, Haven Medical is offering our listeners a special unadvertised price on the Cox 8 table. Not only that, but they will also pay to send you to the next postgraduate Cox Technique certification class. If you'd like to learn more and take advantage of this special offer, give Amanda at Haven Medical a call at 616-935-1049 and tell her you heard it on our podcast. That number again is 616-935-1049. Give Haven Medical a call today.